Well, if his appearances in the Police Academy films are any indication, this next young actor doesn't count his lines when he looks at a script. He counts how many noises he gets to make. It's hard to imagine a better choice to present the Oscar for sound effect editing than Michael Winslow.
The job of sound effects editor is to match the sound effect with the picture. Like a helicopter firing a rocket.
They're giving out awards for sound effects? How about this?
Hey, we got a winner up here!
Now, being a sound effects editor is it's a fun job because they have all these great sound effects to work with. For example, a sports car crashing into an ice cream stand. Let's see that again. No time. Tonight, the nominees for achievement in sound effects editing are Charles L. Campbell and Robert Rutledge for Back to the Future. Bob Henderson and Alan Murray for Lady Hawk. Frederick J. Brown for Rambo, First Blood, Part 2.
Adrian!
And the winner is, drum roll please, the winner is, Charles L. Campbell and Robert Rutledge are Back to the Future!
I first dreamed of this great honor a long time ago, a long way from Hollywood, on a front porch swing. Ladies and gentlemen of the Academy, I am most deeply grateful. And for all of you out there who harbor such dreams as I, may your time come too. Thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank the Academy very much, and I'd like to dedicate this to my late mother editor, Evelyn Rutledge, for the 48 years she put in this business. Thank you.
One, two, three.
Marty McFly, Marty McFly. Marty McFly is Marty McFly. Marty McFly is Marty McFly.
Next group, please.
so often YouTube comes through. You know, that little algorithm actually works. So I was looking up something else, some music that wasn't even Back to the Future. And in the sidebar, the little suggested videos, it was the Back to the Future Oscar clip that played at the opening here, which was so of its time, like the lame little joke that Alan Alda gives at the beginning. This is from the 1986 Oscars. And of course, Michael Winslow being the person to do the introduction. And I mean, he just was like, he went full Winslow. I mean, you want sound effects? He's doing sound effects. He's doing the class and the classic ones, which of course, all come, originally as Laravel Jones Police Academy. And if you didn't know those other two voices, it was Statler and Waldorf. They were at the Oscars in the balcony. I don't know if they were there all night, you know, doing, being sarcastic, but 1986, it was like, what were the Muppets even doing then? There was no Muppet TV show. The Muppet movies were done. This was like before they started doing, this was a couple of years before Christmas Carol, and that's still Jim Henson, definitely, because he's still alive in 1986. But that's not about, we're not here to talk about Michael Winslow. We're not here to talk about the Muppets. We're here to talk about Back to the Future. And today is day 24, the 24th day of March, the 24th day of Marchy McFly, the 24th day in a row that I watched Back to the Future. I started it early before work. I finished it at dinner time. And I swear to God to you, I took a screenshot to remind me that at the moment when Marty says, are you telling me that it's 8:25? It was 8:25 a.m. this morning. I am completely serious that happened. It was kismet. It was kismet. I want to talk quickly about the Oscar winners. I looked them up and it was like, oh, it was two men. They were the supervising sound editors. Robert Rutledge was the second person to speak, and Charles L. Campbell, I think he was credited there as C.L. Campbell, was the first person to speak. And this is 36 years ago, and they're both of them are gone. Both of them are no longer with us. I believe Charles actually lived to be in his 80s. He died maybe in 2013 I have his Wikipedia right here. He passed away in 2013 at the age of 82. He worked on a ton of things, a lot of Spielberg stuff. I say a lot of Spielberg stuff. He definitely worked on Amistad. Schindler's List. Oh yeah, this guy was Back to the Future 3, Back to the Future 2, Back to the Future 1. This dude, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, so he did a lot of Zemeckis stuff. Sound editor for The Breakfast Club, Spies Like Us, Three Amigos. I should do a Three Amigos month. Ruthless People. E.T., Eddie and the Cruisers. Oh my goodness, there's a movie that lived on HBO. Trading Places. This guy did Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I mean, he did it all. Hook, The Rocketeer, Death Becomes Her. Okay. A Few Good Men. He worked all the way up until Catch Me If You Can. Boom. So this guy was working, for years. And he won Academy Awards for E.T., Back to the Future, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And he passed away in 2013 at the age of 82 years old. So he lived a long and storied life. But unfortunately, the other man, Robert Rutledge, he passed away in 2001. He was only 53 years old. He worked on Cuckoo's Nest, Star Wars. Yogi Space Race. Cool. Empire Strikes Back. Oh my goodness. Police Academy. Did he and like Michael Winslow high five? He probably didn't even see them. Cat's Eye. Ooh, I saw that in the theater. Back to the Future. Poltergeist 2. Masters of the Universe. Tango and Cash. Jetsons the movie. Then a couple movies I don't know of. But yeah, he passed away a little younger. But geez, Michael Winslow at least is still with us. Wow, that was it was cool to see the Oscar winning film that is Back to the Future, but it was like, you know, you realize it's a long time ago and these are grown men. So 36 years, you know, things change. People die. Oh boy, what a downer. Okay. I want to go through a couple notes here. I did take some notes. I mentioned yesterday on the show, Jay mentioned that Marty, he parked that truck at a weird angle. I noticed it today. He's 1,000% correct. I never noticed it, never thought about it before. It just was just the truck was there. And it was like, I wonder if Toyota's like, you know, hey, you want to put our car there? Can you put it a little angle so we can actually see it better? So they're not just looking straight on and we can see Marty kind of looking in the door. Like it was definitely there for fashion, not function, if you know what I mean. So that was, I'm glad I looked at that. I wrote down, imagine if Doc fell. Like this is where the movie takes a turn. So he's on the clock tower. He falls. Marty's driving down at 88 miles per hour. He hits the wire and he's like, he closes his eyes, you know, the sparks are flying and nothing happens. He doesn't realize this at first. He gets out and he's looking around. He's like, wait a second, it's still 1955. He goes over to the clock tower and he's like,
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Please, you can live in my house.
Doc. I don't know that. Again, that took a turn too. I just wrote down, imagine if Doc fell. Oh my goodness gracious. Okay, I wrote down Jerry Hawk. What the hell? Oh, I know what this means. I was thinking that if this was a movie made nowadays, or if it was made with more stupid, like, you know, on the nose, you know, like the Chuck Berry thing was a fun, cool, little, cute little thing. But if this was made by a lesser person, they would have been like, you know, shown Marty give the skateboard back to the kid. And then the mother would have been right there. He goes, Jerry Hawk, you get over here right away. And of course, we find out that Jerry Hawk would then later have a son named Tony Hawk. I have no idea who Tony Hawk's dad's name is. I picked Jerry Hawk because, I don't know, it made me laugh. I also talked to Jay about, you know, I wonder if Doc filled Marty in with what he missed, you know, after they reconnected, although he didn't really get a chance because just all hell broke loose the next day. And, you know, Marty never really got a chance to just relax with Doc. He never even had that big of a chance to relax with his old family. I mean, the 1985 that he came back to, that's for years ahead. I'm getting ahead of myself. But I was like, you think on the drive home, Doc would have been like, now, Marty, I've been paying attention to your parents. Things are a little different. They're doing much better. Dave doesn't work at the Burger King anymore. Well, actually, how would he know? How would he know? He wouldn't know to tell him. So maybe he would have filled him in if they had the chance, but he wouldn't know things are different. So, nope, I take that back. Oh, time travel is so much fun. I did say Marty should have tried CPR on Doc. You know, like he sees Doc there. Maybe there's one bullet. I don't know. Maybe a lot of them missed. Maybe he's still clinging on to life. Marty should have at least tried, you know, compressions and mouth to mouth. I also noticed in the downtown Hill Valley, it's mostly these little mom and pop shops that were made up, but they did have, you know, an actual Texaco, or at least a Texaco station and a Bank of America, which are actual stores. That just caught my eye, and I don't know. I thought it was interesting. And I mentioned, I might have already talked about this, that I thought the power lines weren't there always, but they were always behind the McFly house. They were there. Like, I thought there was something about the alternative 85 with the power lines and the power, the big, you know, whatever those, the towers. But those were always there behind the house. And the one last note I want to mention is when Marty says to George, you come up, you punch me in the stomach, and I go down. So that was the plan. And if you remember, George stuck to the plan because he's in his brain. He's never fought before. He was thinking, I got a punch in the stomach. I got a punch in the stomach. I got a punch in the stomach. So when Biff is about to, beat the hell out of George, George goes first and just, what does he do? He goes for a punch in the stomach. Doesn't work, but he went for what he was planning the whole time because he was so freaked out. He just had that, probably rehearsed it over and over again. So I thought that was I can't imagine that was a mistake. Like, or that was just a coincidence that he told George to punch him in the stomach, to Marty. And when it was Biff instead, he went for the punch in the stomach. That is that's actually my favorite little find. I don't even know if it's really a find, but it was like, oh, wait a second. And I really enjoy that.
It's Hollywood Insider for March 24th, 2021. Tonight, Mike talks with the cast of Back to the Future.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
So, without further ado, here's Mikey.
We're not ready. It's not... I don't know. I'm clicking on it. Nothing's... I'm just gonna... Who? Oh my God. Hey America, how are you? It's Hollywood Insider for March 24th, 2021. I'm Mike, coming to you safely from the confines of my home. I hope everybody is safe and wearing a mask. And tonight, the plan was to be talking to the cast of Back to the Future on a Zoom call. They're all over the country, and of course, with COVID going on, the easiest way to get everybody back for a reunion, and there seems to be a major Zoom outage kind of going all over the country. We're unable to connect to the main cast who we're able to talk to, Michael J. Fox, Tom Wilson, Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, and we're even going to be getting a guest appearance from Crispin Glover for the first time to talk with the rest of the cast. We had Steven Spielberg lined up, Bob Gale, Bob Zemeckis, Donald Fullove, Goldie Wilson, Harry Waters Jr., Mr. Marvin Berry. We even had motherfucking Billy Zane lined up for tonight, all right? But with the Zoom issue, it seems like there's only one person we're able to connect to. Sir, are you there? Press the mute button. I think you're on mute. Just try.
Hello. Hello. Michael.
Yes. Hello. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I'm sorry. Were you saying something?
I was going to introduce you, but I don't have... I apologize. I don't have your information here in front of me.
That's quite all right. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Kip Sutherland, actor from Back to the Future.
You said Kip Sutherland?
Yes, Kipperman James Sutherland. No relation. But yes, that's me. You call me Kip. And I, of course, am here for the big reunion Zoom. But it looks like I'm the only one who's able to connect.
Well, we're excited to have you here. And so you're like a producer. You worked in the production, of the film?
On-screen talent, film actor, Back to the Future, just as my headshot says.
Huh. Well, Mr. Sutherland, it is an honor to have you here for Marty McFly to talk about Back to the Future.
My pleasure.
So I've been watching the movie every day, and I don't know if it's just because it's been a long time, but I can't...
So many memories.
Can't quite place you as to where you were in the movie. My apologies.
No apologies needed. That happens all the time here. Let me get something out of my bag here to kind of maybe this will jog your memory.
For those of you listening, he's taking something out of his bag and putting it on his head. Is that a dog head?
You got that right, buddy. You're looking at the world's first time traveler.
The what?
The world's first very true.
Can you please take the mask off? It's really hard to understand you.
Sure.
What I said was, you're looking at the world's first time traveler. It's me.
Wait, are you saying that you played Einstein in Back to the Future? Sir, I've seen Back to the Future many times, and that's a real dog.
Of course Einstein is a real dog, but do you think they're going to put a real dog behind the wheel of a DeLorean? I don't think that dog can drive. I don't even know if it has its license.
Oh, I get it. So you were the stunt driver who drove the DeLorean in the mall parking lot.
No, I am an on-screen actor who played the role of Einstein as he traveled through time. Just like my Wikipedia page says every time I have to re-edit it.
Okay. Okay. We'll go with this. So can you tell me, I mean, what was it like working on set and working
with
the other actors?
Great question. As you know, it's been well documented how it was a grueling shoot the first time around with Eric Stoltz, and then, of course, coming with Michael J. Fox. And Michael J. Fox was doing Family Ties at the time, which is a sitcom that I did not appear on, but I watched it. I was an avid viewer. And he would do nights with us and then days with Family Ties. I didn't actually meet Michael J. Fox, but I've heard he was a really, really great guy. And also Christopher Lloyd, I also heard he was a wonderful, wonderful man. I didn't actually meet him either, but it was it was definitely a grueling shoot. I remember the day that I was on set. I was on set for a total of 45 minutes, on screen, you know, for at least a few seconds. It's documented. It's in my IMDb. But it was the second unit director who shot my shot, so I didn't actually get to meet Robert Zemeckis or the writer Bob Gale. I didn't get to meet any of the producers, Frank Marshall, Kathleen Kennedy, Neil Canton, Steven Spielberg. I did get to meet Eric Stoltz once, and he was a prick. But other than that, everyone else was really nice.
Kip, can I just ask a quick question? How did you know about this Zoom?
You invited me.
Are you sure I am?
I'm almost positive you invited me.
Kip.
Well, to be honest.
Tell the truth, please.
I found a link to it on the Back to the Future Reddit page.
Kip, did you actually meet Eric Stoltz?
Whoa, am I under oath here?
Kip, I'm just going to ask you this one time. Were you actually in Back to the Future or associated with Back to the Future in any way?
Well, you know,
I think we're losing you, Kip. It's
my connection.
This might be for the best.
It's cutting.
Okay, I'm going to let you go.
Cutting in.
No, I'm going to let you go now, Kip.
Thank
I really
you so
appreciate
much for having.
Can you just hit mute?
Marty McFly, if you want.
Yeah, I just
cameo.
Oh my goodness, I don't know who this guy is, who he was. He's gone now. I apologize, everybody. We really did have a great show lined up. So I'm just going to sign off. Until next time, hooray for Hollywood. So, full disclosure, I had an idea for that a couple days ago, and I actually took my dog to a dog park, or a rail trail in Salem, New Hampshire. It's, you know, a place where you can walk, and it's like a 20-minute drive, so I said, you know what, I'm going to hit record on my phone and almost make it sound like, you know, bad audio, and I was going to record, you know, this guy talking about being the dog. But I made it like 10 minutes and somebody at a four-way stop, like went through the stop sign. So I in the recording, you hear me like kind of just lose my cool. And I just was flustered. I was like, you know what? I can't do this right now. So I just figured I'd do it tonight. But what's funny is this is, you know, based in truth, what, you know, the dog head. I figured it was. I don't think I've ever seen this picture before, but I actually typed in dog inside DeLorean. And it's awesome because it led me to this article on Fandango. I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes. It says, you've probably never seen these Back to the Future images before. This was from October 21st, 2015, of course, for Back to the Future Day. This was written by Christopher Campbell in Fandango. And I was like, oh, I probably have seen these images before. I'm pretty sure I've seen none of these images before. Okay. The first one is the actual time machine designs. It shows the original sketches from production illustrator Andrew Probert and a blueprint by consultant Rob Cobb for the DeLorean time machine, plus storyboards. So this is really cool. It's like it has an actual blueprint of what everything would be in the DeLorean. There's some like kind of drawings of it. And there's also, I mean, I don't know exactly, there's drawings of Doc. Looks like it's at the end. That is really, really cool. It has another thing. So the next photo is actually Einstein's stunt double. It shows a photo of a dude sitting in the DeLorean wearing a dog head. And I couldn't tell you who the guy's name is. It doesn't say. It said they had a stunt driver behind the wheel wearing a Catalan sheepdog mask that looks like Einstein. They said it was kind of, Bob Gale mentioned that putting the dog behind the wheel was a nod to Disney's The Shaggy Dog, but they couldn't just put a dog in the driver's seat and pull the vehicle. So they, that's where they put a guy in a mask. So the photo didn't inspire me to do this, whatever that was, but the idea of it did help me find this article. So that was it's a really cool photo. Of just like this guy just standing there with a dog head. There's a photo of like the first sketch of the flux capacitor, and it says that it's a blatant copy of the oscillation overthruster from the Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai and Across the Eighth Dimension. Of course, both of those were produced by Neil Canton. I don't know, you know, Buckaroo Banzai is one of those movies that I just know of. I don't know. You know, I don't think I've ever actually seen it. This is a really cool thing. This is a memo from a company called Fenton Feinberg Casting. And it says August 21st, 1984, casting with Jane Feinberg, Judy Taylor, and Bob Zemeckis for the role of the scientist in, quote, Back to the Future. So it was still called Back to the Future then. So there are so many names. Now, in the corner, There are other names written in it. I'm sure that these are all the Martys. They're written, I see Eric Stoltz, C.T. Howell, you know, C. Thomas Howell, Ralph Macchio. I don't know what who the fourth name is. I can't make it out. But that is, I don't know how big I can make it. I can zoom in really quick. Cusack. So John Cusack also, I'm sure I've, you know, when they say these are, you know, people who were thought of. So this is what the casting, they make this giant list of people. So this is the list of Doc. And, this is really cool. I'm going to go through the whole list at least and see which names I know. And they have, some have check marks. So let's go through the ones that have check marks first. Jeff Goldblum, of course, that would have been good. Ron Silver. Well, you know what? Jeff Goldblum probably would have been interesting. Ron Silver. Gene Hackman. Oh, my God. James Woods and Christopher Lloyd were all the ones that had check marks next to them. Then there's a couple with question marks. Joe Bologna, question mark. David Dukes. Isn't he, like, in the Klan, or is that David Duke? Garrett Graham, I don't know who that is. Someone else, then there's a name, Charlie Martin Smith, crossed out. Then we have a bunch of, Joe Piscopo, not available, question mark. John Lithgow, not available. Peter Boyle, Donald Sutherland, Dabney Coleman, Richard Mulligan, John Hurd, not available. Robin Williams, Mandy Patinkin, someone put question marks. Treat Williams, Mickey Rourke, Alan Arkin, Charles Grodin, Gene Wilder, Renee Abigail Wong. I know that name. Paul LaMotte, Harold Ramis was written in. Albert Brooks, Chevy Chase. See, if Chevy Chase could go for it, I don't know. I don't know if he can. Like, he's too much of a dick. Like, and I mean, like, his characters can be. Well, I guess Clark W. Griswold is. Steve Martin, Mark Blankfield. I don't know that name. Robert Klein, Danny DeVito, Bob Balaban, Kevin Conway, Paul Dooley from 16 Candles, John Candy, Henry Winkler, Eddie Murphy, Bill Cosby. That would not have aged. Oh my God, imagine if this movie was a huge hit with Bill Cosby. And then you're looking at it now and you're like, Marty, we got to get back to the future. And like this pudding, this Jell-O pudding pox all over his apartment. But you also see there's some Spanish fly over here that I put in the drinks. Goo-ba-da-boo. I don't know why Bill Cosby doesn't make that sound. Randy Quaid. Oh, there's another one that would have been weird to look at now. That is Michael Keaton crossed out deal with Fox. Oh, yes, he has a deal with Fox. That is awesome reading that. So I'm going to put a link. You can see all these photos yourself. Eric Stoltz is Marty McFly. We all know about that. And it shows the scene where in the diner where Marty punches Biff. And what they're saying is this shot made it in the movie. I know Tom Wilson has talked about it before. There's a YouTube video that's in the article too. You can watch that. And it says, you know, this is the scene where the hand punching Biff is Eric Stoltz's hand, because he's like, we never shot this with Michael J. Fox. Then we have title change. I've talked about this in the trivia before, that the producer Sid Sheinberg sent a letter to Steven Spielberg, a memo asking about changing the name of the movie. This is the actual memo, the MCA Interoffice Memorandum from October 17th, 1984, from Sid Sheinberg to Mr. Steven Spielberg. Please send copies to Bob Zemeckis and Bob Gale. And then Bob Zemeckis' name is checked off, so I don't know if this is his copy. And I'm going to just read it. Although I believe that the present draft is terrific, and I marvel at the improvements that you've made from the quote-unquote Columbia version, so that must have been when Columbia Pictures was going to be doing it, I continue to believe the title leaves much to be desired. There are a number of reasons why I found the title less than wonderful, but quote with quotes around it. But my primary concern is that it appears to make the picture a genre, quotes, picture. I think the script, and hopefully the film, deserves a better title. Now that I have buttered you up, I would suggest we consider the title Spaceman from Pluto. And we've talked about this before. Then he says, underpinning these suggestions are the following thoughts. And then he has a Roman numeral list. Number one, modify the dialogue on page 35 so that Sherman calls Marty a spaceman from Pluto. Number two, modify Marty's dialogue on page 77 so that he identifies himself as a spaceman from Pluto instead of Darth Vader from Vulcan. Number three, change the title of the book written by George and referred to on page 130 from a match made in space to a spaceman in Pluto. Obviously, you get the idea. I'm sure that there will be those who will argue that the movie will appear to the audience to be a cheap, old-fashioned sci-fi flick. Nonsense! I think it's kind of a title that has heat, originality, and projects fun. Most importantly, I think it avoids the feeling of genre time travel movie. So wait. Spaceman from Pluto doesn't feel genre related? I mean, okay, I went with his, right? He was the guy who also said Lorraine because he's married to Lorraine Gary. Okay. I love that, you know, I don't know if it's true, but the Hollywood legend is that Steven Spielberg, who obviously had a ton of pull at that time, he wrote back and said, great, great practical joke, really funny. Everyone here got a kick out of all the jokes you said. I love that because, you know, then he just kind of like, okay, he just zipped his lip after that. Now this next one, this is kind of fun. I've never seen this before, and I don't think it was actually part of the original movie. It says, this is George McFly's novel. It says, below is the back cover and synopsis for the sci-fi novel. We never actually saw this in the film. This was created and written by Bob Gale specifically for Back to the Future, the Ultimate Visual History. So I don't know if this was ever even on the back cover. I don't know if they ever made a back cover. No, the back was George McFly. So this must have just, I don't know, this was under him or I don't know. Anyway, let's read it anyway. George McFly's best-selling first novel is now in paperback. Oh, so this is for the paperback version we never saw. This is Bob Gale having a little fun, but let's read it. Theirs was a love that was cosmically ordained. Or was it? Raylene was from Chicago. She was young, beautiful, and her heart belonged to another. Roger was from Kansas. He was young, ordinary, and an incident at age 14 had caused him to shun the opposite sex. Garth DeVade was from planet Culvin. See, they switch things around there. Where love was unknown. He was sent to Earth on a mission regarding the fate of the entire universe. A mission involving Raylene and Roger. Okay. But what was this mission? And how could the lives of two young people have cosmic repercussions? Was Garth DeVade, with his ability to create sonic frequencies powerful enough to melt a human brain, really a galactic matchmaker? Or did he have a secret, insidious agenda? Find out in A Match Made from Space. Retail price $3.50. A disclaimer, this representation of the fictional novel is intended for entertainment purposes only. It's not for sale. Oh, so there's even a disclaimer saying, you know, if anyone ever put this on something, yeah, that's not actually a thing. And that's it. Those are all the pictures that this article had. But I'm glad that, you know, a dumb thing, dumb, silly skit I wanted to do led to me finding this article that I'd never seen before and seeing some things I've never seen before. And this article is from 6 years ago, and I feel shame that I didn't know this one before. But that's it. I think we did it. I think we nailed it. So I'm going to put a link to this in the show notes. And of course, you know where you can find me, on Twitter and on Instagram. I am available at Geek Mentality. The Facebook page is Fans Not Experts, and the website is fansnotexperts.com. 24 days down. 6 days to go. 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31. 7 more days to go. I'm good at math, and here is my theme song. This is my podcast. I made it. Geek Mentality is what I named it. And I think you should listen and subscribe. 'Cause I'm kinda funny and awesome. I think that I'm worth your time, and I'm kinda handsome. My mom says, please listen and please subscribe. At least listen to this episode.
Fans Not Experts.
What are you looking at, butthead?